anymore. Things ain't cool no more. Things ain't cool anymore. You can't be fool no more. Can't be fool no more. Wise men follow the guiding star. Without guidance we won't get very far. When will we see that love is the way? Time out, time to take a stock. Wolf as shepherd, chosen to lead the flock. And so we suffer through all this misery. Things ain't cool anymore. Things ain't cool no more. It's not cool. Can't be fooled. We can't be fooled no more. Out of many comes a nation. One at a time we'll fill the whole population. We've got to stand up and speak for the right. Nurture the children, so tomorrow will be better for them. But today we battle the force for liberty. Things ain't cool anymore. Things ain't cool anymore. It's not cool.
Things Ain't Cool by Julian Marley. This next one, Trod On by Jaman, off of his album Bamboo Station Presents Talking. Whoa, sorry about that. Alright, Trod On by Jaman, here you go. Thank you for listening. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3.
Trod On.
From a distance, them see the youths on the vines. Ignorant them be and them gangs on the line. I figure out that them life must be lies. So we fund them hypocrites and all them social ties. The youths arise and it's a trigger them disguise. Catch on, I have Indians deep aside of them rhyme. It's what them hoping to provide. But the Almighty shall never leave my side. We're never gonna sit out the wiki just like a fruit tree. Just gotta be needed. Free as can be and be cleansed facility. We're never gonna play where there ain't no way that we grow down the vibes down stay. I just a one of them real become out play. Things that they get to you, them go through every day. And I say, you have to push on. And you say, Rasta man keep on. And I say, all the faith is strong. And all your meditation just feels good and calm. From a distance, them see the youths all the vibes. Ignorant them be and them girls on the line. I figure out that them life must be lies. So we fund them hypocrites and all them social ties. The youths arise and it's a trigger them disguise. Can't chant, I have Indians keep aside. The devil rise is what them hoping to provide. But the Almighty shall never leave my side. And while we stay up in the ghetto and just roaming, certain things of the world I'm not condoning. Them all are backward genetics and them cloning. And use infrared because they toning. Homing device, the Babylon them controlling. Weeping the national teeth will be moaning. If we don't do something, we stop the groaning. Half we little youths in the world are go get droning. So I say, when go is a better way. Sometimes it feels like a getaway. But I know Rastafari duty. Focus night and day. So boy now, chadam 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 chadam. I figure out that them life must be lies, so we fund them hypocrites and all them social ties. The youths arise, I need to trigger them disguise. Catch on, tie up in the honesty, for side of devil rise. It's what them hoping to provide, but the Almighty shall never left my side, yeah. We're never gonna sit on the wiki, just like a fruit tree. Just gotta be me, that free us from the LP, cleanses for synergy. We're never gonna play where there ain't no way that we crowd and the vibes can stay. I just wanna come real, we come out late. Things that get to you, them go through every day. And I say, yo, I be push on. And you say, Rasta man, keep on. And I say, all the faith is strong. I know your meditation just so cool and calm me. From a distance, them see the youths all the vines. Ignorant them be and them can't on the lines. I figure out that them life must be lies, so we fund them hypocrites and all them social ties. The youths arise, honey to trigger them disguise. Catch on, I have Indians, keep aside the devil rise. Is what them hoping to provide, but the Almighty shall never leave my side. Sitting in a one way. Right, Nati, right, I say go day day to day. Sitting in a one way.
Stations at the home. Blessings
of India. Love. Trot on by Jaman. This next one's gonna be by Giant Panda Gorilla Dub Squad. In These Times. We played a couple of their songs in the past on the show. Definitely some positive vibes. Taking a little country reggae. Giant Panda Gorilla Dub Squad. Happy hour with DJ Namaste.
mana o que te aku o maka palu palu e que aloha elo e pili e ika puvei ai nei hie hie na kamakua haoli ka mana o que te aku o maka palu palu e que aloha elo e pili e ika puvei ai nei
Israel Izzy Kamakawiwole with Kapuawi. This next one, RX Bandits with Progress. A little more progressive than usual. But it's fun. Get up, dance around, chill. RX Bandits with Progress. Happy hour, DJ Namaste.
Now you're thinking I'm so stupid. That's alright. You don't know just what you're saying. And in due time, what I'm going through, I don't care that you won't prosper. What I say to you comes in one ear and out the other.
That was RX Bandits. It's a lot of fun, high energy. This next one, Tribal Seeds. Sun and Water, Tribal Seeds. Just want to thank everyone, all my friends, family for listening right now. Shout out to all of you. I love you. Look forward to seeing you.
Come boy, let us place our seeds inside you.
Sun and water.
Come let the rain fall down to the earth. Let the man sit upon the rocks and book. And I see you know sorrow.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's, yes, you guessed it, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Special guest, Doug Loisel, who's a guy who's going to talk about the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services center, services that homeless people should be receiving, his own impressions of how things are going here, and his experience with that particular group. Gosh, I think it was... what, 4 years ago? Something like that. 2009 now. And we've talked on the air before by phone. I don't think you've been in the studio before.
I've been once.
He was here once. But he had more hair then, I think. he's a man without hair, but a not man without principles. And that's the issue. And we have a couple of other people, silent witnesses in the studio, to make sure we don't get carried away. So stay tuned. Sorry I'm late. We had a little... difficulty kind of getting in with sort of a slow start. And I hope for those of you who are listening on the radio that you be aware you can join the program. You can be a part of Free Radio by simply using a phone, if you have one with you, or if you can find one of the rare pay phones that still can be found in the unusual exotic spots. The numbers here are 831-427-3772. 831-427-3772, and 831-469-3119, 469-3119. Let's listen to a little of the rather tepid but still occasionally amusing Capital Steps, and I'll be right back with Doug and my usual collection of interviews, commentary, and perhaps your phone calls. It could be. Hope you join me.
We protect the president from danger.
In Cartagena, we got help from strangers.
Thought we deserved a tryst. We got secretly serviced.
Odds are we won't be employed tomorrow.
Secret servicemen in Colombia.
We hired 15 hookers.
To pay with Groupon was our plan.
Though we got it on with some hot mama, we'd still take a bullet for Obama.
When we saw some hookers start aiming for his private parts, we gladly threw ourselves in front of danger.
Secret service hits where the danger sits.
We gotta frisk you ladies' blouses.
Yeah, we're looking for counterfeits.
In the press you've heard that they've been hinting
that we were trained by watching guys like Clinton.
We were having so much fun. Newt's just said his race is done.
Now that he's quit, he'll join us both tomorrow.
Secret service can help you understand.
You can't spend drunken nights with hookers unless you're a congressman.
Control pill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, lots of folks would kill me in this capital city, in camp campaign season. The debate will not be pretty, but I know I'll be the rule someday. Make mamas rare, yes I will, when Obamacare gives us free pills.
Gee, Pill, you sure have a lot of patience and courage.
Well, I got this far. You see, at first, the president said that all health insurers must cover birth control as preventative care. But after complaints from conservatives, Obama amended it so that religious groups could opt out.
That's called morning after politics.
I'm just the Pill. They'll debate me until they are sick of me on Capitol Hill. They held some meetings in committee, which only men addressed.
Now women's rights have become a sausage fest.
Priests and congressmen cannot write the law.
They think they can tutor us. Keep your hands off of our uterus. Pill, did you hear all those congressmen arguing? Is all that discussion and debate about you?
Yep, because the GOP right-wingers got into the debate.
Yikes, that's the proverbial elephant in the womb.
Don't kill free pills, men of Capitol Hill. Just think twice if you don't think women will.
Remember just how you voted.
It might cause an insurrection.
It should be noted, mess with us, lose your election. We women hope that both parties know.
I prevent pregnancies, this is true.
And you might prevent presidencies too.
Well, I just don't think women are gonna wanna give up their birth control.
Well, that doesn't mean we need the pill.
What do you mean? Do you know something that works as well for birth control?
Oh, yeah. A picture of Rush Limbaugh.
Well, that was two from the Capitol steps. Secret Service man, and I'm just a pill. I hope you were listening, because I wasn't. I was talking with the guest, or guests, actually. But the main man on the mic here is Daredevil Doug Loisel, who has dared to come back to Santa Cruz, whence he was banished in 2009 for torts or accused criminal behavior which had nothing to do with his job, and from which he has either, you had some alcohol problem back then that you acknowledged, but that really, as far as I never smelled any liquor on your breath, no women came to me with tales of sexual abuse. In fact, people told me, and I learned that it was in fact true, that you were probably one of the best liked, well, there weren't many of them before you, it was only one before you, Ken Cole, directors of the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services center, what was is more popularly known as the homeless services center out at 115 Coral Street. But they ran you out of town on this stuff, but you have still been keeping an eye on what's going on. By this stuff, I mean accusations of sexual improprieties with a woman who was later proved to be lying. Was that the story?
Well, actually, the...
Talk a little closer to the mic, by the way.
Yeah, basically the case was dismissed. And so I was able to go back, and I was able to re-enter a plea of... not guilty. That plea was accepted, and since that plea was accepted, it created a situation where I was never convicted, and so there was never a conviction. Then it went to a civil case, and in the civil case, I paid out no money. So there was.
They attempted to sue you for damages.
She attempted to sue me for discrimination.
And in what way did she claim? First of all, who was this person?
Well, I can't say her name because it's still...
What was the nature of her? Can you talk about it at all?
I can talk about it in generalities.
Well, what kind of a position did she have?
She was a student.
And she claimed that you had discriminated in what way?
Well, In the civil suit, the discrimination was that it was under Title IX that she did not have or was able to access a... an equal education, because that's part of the Title IX.
This is down in L.A.?
Yeah, down in L.A. Right.
And somebody, you moved in, grabbed all her books, ran off with her computer?
No, I was highly intoxicated, and I also was under the influence of Ambien. And I touched her on the face. I gave her a hug. And I think that was about it.
Anyone in the studio wants me to touch them on the face and give them a hug, let me know. But I want no lawsuits at the moment, if you don't mind, and no criminal charges, which you also, you were charged criminally for that, correct?
Correct, yes. And what happened was she had reported this to law enforcement, and at that point law enforcement proceeded to use her identity to trap me into meeting her at a hotel under the auspices of, you know, we're going to have sexual relations. It was, of course, 9 in the morning when this was occurring, so I was completely inebriated at that moment. As
9 well. In the morning? You were an early drinker?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. You don't seem intoxicated now. Is it because it's evening, or what's the deal?
Well, I have stuff to do for Christmas and Easter, so I'm not drinking now.
I see. You're holding off until after Easter. It maybe,
right.
You know, all the bets are off.
Right.
Okay.
Right. No, I've actually ceased to I ceased drinking after that, because I felt like drinking had taken a lot away, more away from me than it had given me in the criminal.
This was 2010, 2011 when you came to this conclusion. 29.
29.
Because when I knew you in the summer of 29, there was no indication that you were much of a problem drinker. Was that the case then?
No, I wasn't a problem drinker at that point. And the situation occurred in 2008. I stopped drinking in 2008, started attending Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, started to get into...
Did you tell the authorities here, this is a big issue since, you know, you got bumped out of here because you became the director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center in 2009 in the spring?
March.
In March. Did you advise, you, was the big deal you didn't advise them of these allegations and the ongoing criminal claims at that time, and that was why you suddenly became a persona non grata here 6 months later and kicked out?
That's exactly correct. Right. I didn't talk about the case. The criminal case went on for a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
And finally it was settled. After it was settled, then the civil case
dragged on for another...
I'd say 6 months.
And was it significant that you didn't mention this? I mean, obviously it had some impact in the sense that the reputation-sensitive board of directors would naturally, you know, flee from you like poison if they learned of this, do you think? Well, you wouldn't have been able to get the job?
In a sense, it was a mistake not to mention what had occurred up front. Okay.
In another sense, it wasn't, because when you were here, you were able to actually get the bathrooms open during the day and establish the only 24-hour bathroom in Santa Cruz for homeless people.
I'm very proud of
that. And all of us, our bladders are all very grateful for that.
No, you know, I needed a job. It's an economic world. I mean, you know, I needed a job. I was struggling finding a job. This was a job that came up. I thought that maybe... until I could somehow get this legal matter resolved, I could hang on to this job. Hopefully the legal matter would have been resolved in my favor, and I could move forward. My current employer knows exactly what happened.
What kind of work do you do now?
I'm the program officer, basically program director at a methadone clinic.
Mm-hmm.
So we work with patients who suffer from opiate addiction, heroin, pills, etc.
And you had something of an addictive problem with alcohol, or just an occasional overindulgence? What was your...
I was a binge drinker, and I also would poly-substance use, you know. I think probably the best way to describe my addiction was more. So whatever was available, I would ingest.
I don't really, frankly, give a shit about what people ingest as long as it doesn't interfere with their work or they don't abuse other people around it. And you've seen very, you know, regretful when I've talked to you, probably because of the difficulties it's put you in. And also, I would say a lot of us regret that we lost what seemed to be a very... an unusually sensitive and somewhat courageous director at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I mean, you didn't do everything. You and I did not agree on everything all the time. But I think, did you still have lockers at the Homeless Lack of Services Center when you were still there?
Yes, we had lockers.
They've removed all those lockers, you know.
They have removed lockers.
And did you have access to phone services for the homeless when you were there?
Yes.
They don't allow that anymore either. You should be aware. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
Well, you know, I mean, we made some improvements since you were gone.
Right.
You don't want to pamper these homeless people. I mean, it only encourages them like, you know, flies and gnats. They come in droves, you know, I mean, because of the wonderful services. And that, of course, is, I'm being sarcastic, folks, so they don't catch my dry irony. It's a little too dry sometimes. I'm told, don't be ironic, they say, because some people say, see, he said he's a serious. And I'm not serious. I'm bitter, really. And I also think it's, it's something that deserves sarcasm and deserves a kind of sharp lampooning. And so I do that. Have you been much in touch? I know there is a former employee of the Homeless Lack of Services Center that you've had some contact with, and she too was fired at that time or let go. Sometime she may be willing to come on the air. I'm hoping that she will at some point. We'll drag her into the studio, perhaps.
Well, of course.
And have you talked with her much about what's going on out there? Does she know? I guess she hasn't been out there that much either, though.
Well, actually, I found this employee to be an excellent employee. I felt like she really related well to the clients. Very friendly, very gentle, and really having a high level of empathy for the clients. Unfortunately, after I left, she was terminated. I'm not sure exactly what the circumstances were around the termination, but it sounds to me, from speaking with her after that, that basically they cleaned house and moved most of all the previous employees out and moved a whole new section of employees in. I'm not sure why or what that's all about, but it seems that I was actually, to be honest with you, I was shocked that she was terminated because she was an excellent employee, and I'm not sure if she was able to relate too closely with the homeless persons there. I don't know if she was too friendly. I don't know if she didn't.
You've had conversations with her recently, though.
Absolutely.
And I know that today was the homeless memorial reading of the names of the dead.
Right.
I didn't get out there, but I did get reports from those who were. There's some controversy in town now about trying to establish a warming center so that we don't get deaths or more deaths over here. I heard there's been one death off the record. I don't have the name of the woman who supposedly died, and I don't know that it's even been confirmed, supposedly behind Benicio's Liquors a week ago. But I don't know. Second-hand report, or actually a third-hand report. But it is still an issue that, I guess, Brent Adams is working on the Sanctuary Camp proposal that I have mixed feelings about, but I like the idea of any kind of increased accommodations for people who are outside. He has been leading a group that's, I guess, meeting next Sunday, for anybody interested, at the 525-35 Spring Street. And I'll be announcing that again on the Sunday show for those who want to kind of wander on out there and check into it. I think they're writing letters to all the different churches, to the government agencies, saying, you know, oh, please, please open up. Oh, please, please open up. And, of course, my reaction to this is, you know, this is good. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're going to wait for that while people freeze their asses off for the bureaucratic process to take place instead of doing something more immediate and direct, however, you know, maybe risky in terms of potential legal action, then you're making, I think, the wrong choice. But it's also, of course, a risk for every person who's involved in that kind of action. We used to do it up in San Francisco with homes, not jails. And that's where you would, you know, people would target a building that no one was using, and, you know, that had been some slumlord had had for years, and then we would go into it and open it up and make it usable, and the police would arrest us, there'd be a big hoopla, and then they'd eventually drop all the charges. At least that's what happened in my case in the two or three times I did that back in the early 90s. And I guess one group has talked about, and I've posted a flyer online saying, if there's freezing temperatures being predicted, I, for one, as well as several others, will be down in front of the Civic Auditorium at 5 o'clock on that day, encouraging people to come up with a solution. That could be any number of things. It could be a tent outside with a heater. It could be visiting a building. I understand the City Hall offices are vacant at night and very warm. I understand the Civic Auditorium is vacant at night. I mean, there are plenty of vacant buildings, and the idea that people are going to freeze to death because it might, I don't know, annoy Mayor Rattlesnake Robinson and her takeover Santa Cruz constituency, and actually it's not just them, it's Don Lane too, and all these wonderful liberals who like to talk a lot about homeless civil rights, or not even civil rights, they talk about homeless services. The civil rights issue they don't really like to get into. But I do, that's the main thing I'm concerned about. You went out to the homeless lack of services center today.
Yes.
And what did you find? Had anything changed in the last 4 years? What did you found?
I couldn't see anything that had changed.
So it looked pretty much the same.
It looked pretty much the same.
So it hadn't gotten any worse.
It hasn't.
Unless you want to use the phone or possibly...
Actually think that there was probably more people loitering outside the shelter or outside the grounds than I recall.
Which is actually not so much, it's not illegal, because loitering laws have been tossed out by the Supreme Court,
right,
40 years ago, but the Homeless Lack of Services Center has declared on different occasions they're establishing a no-impact zone around the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
Right.
Which, I don't know, I mean, apparently they're not enforcing it if you were out there today. Of course, it was a Memorial Day for the dead, so maybe there was lenient view.
Well, there was a... You know, there was a lot of people in the no-impact zone, which... Is that an ordinance that they've created?
No, it's a rule that they have put up, indicating I don't know if they have a specific set of rules that says if you're in the no impact zone we'll start denying you services, or if it's we would strongly urge you not to be in the no impact zone because the Harvey West Association and the nearby businesses are paranoid bigots and we have to respond to that or else we'll lose our credibility with the right wing city council. I'm not sure what exactly it is, but
the arbitrary nature of things like no impact zones and we're going to deny you services because you're sitting on the railroad tracks, you know, 40 feet down, the arbitrary application of those kinds of rules, regulations, ordinances, I mean, and who's making these decisions? You know,
well, Mayor Robinson is moving around with the clean them out team, as I like to call it. They call themselves the clean team, to pick up needles, dispose of feces, old condoms, and of course the occasional homeless backpack, which who knows what it might have inside. Could be some kind of terrorist activity going on. Recently, Take Back Santa Cruz activist posting on Steve Plaich's website, Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, but not a better website, unfortunately, has stated that Take Back Santa Cruz has finally agreed that it will train its volunteers in these cleanups not to pick up homeless property and destroy it.
Right.
But I kept asking them this year after year, and they would never acknowledge that, even though SOS, the environmental group that does regular cleanups on the beaches, apparently, according to Steve Plaich again, who's... I don't know how accurate he is, but I haven't heard him contradicted, said that that was the case when he went out on each of those SOS cleanups. So Robinson is out there on the tracks picking up the needles and so forth, and then waving them. Actually, she doesn't wave them. She threatens to wave them.
It's so blatantly discriminatory to have a person who's sitting in a park be cited for loitering versus a family in the park who's having a picnic.
Yeah, but we don't want their kind around here, Doug. Mm-hmm. You got to clean up the whole area, don't you understand?
I think I mentioned this before, that in the history of humanity, there, I believe, has been one case that I could find, and this is with a lot of research, several hours of research, okay, of an individual stepping on a hypodermic needle and picking up a disease. It just doesn't happen. It's not the pandemic that people make it out to be, the media, the city council, the city ordinances. You know, this idea that hypodermics are all over the place, that hypodermics are, you know, proliferating Santa Cruz, it's just not true. It's not accurate, and it's not an accurate representation of the dangers that are involved.
Well, now, it is true that I found my first hypodermic needle in 20 years about half a block from Ocean one day. And that's the only one I've ever found, and I've been out there a bit. I mean, I live indoors, and I don't, I'm not all the time on my feet, but I spend, a certain amount of time each day, usually in downtown Santa Cruz or thereabouts, or at least three or four times a week.
You have a significantly higher chance of being killed by a wild boar in California.
Well, I'll tell you, the council can be pretty bad in that regard. No, they're very, very boring. I'll tell you, I can't stand them.
I'm just a statistics guy. That's all I'm
too
saying.
Civilized, even. Well, it's not really. Yeah, all kidding aside, if I were, I mean, I have not done further research on it, but the very cursory research I've done, the very limited research is, if you're working in a hospital and you're working with active blood,
right,
then you have a danger of infection. What you're
right.
doing, but the people and I've talked to friends of mine have said that their relatives who live in the near the Emmeline complex, so where some claim there's now an upsurge of needles being discarded. That's where the needle exchange now is. It's outside the city in the Emmeline complex. It's been
right.
banned from Santa Cruz,
right.
thanks to the work of the Clean Them Out team and Takeover Santa Cruz, the two groups that how have people on the city council, at least Takeover Santa Cruz does, which they call Take Back Santa Cruz, if we want to be very accurate. But that leads me to another issue, because we've kind of been over this one a lot on this show. What about, there's one of the constant mantras you hear of people talking about the homeless lack of service center, denouncing it at council. I mean, I denounce it for other reasons,
right.
for lack of shelter, for lack of due process for disabled people, for lack of transparency and accountability, for corruption, for not serving homeless people, primarily, and in the way that it needs to. And these are all concerns that, that doesn't mean I don't like the fact that they provide two meals a day. I'm glad that there are the limited shelter services there are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like think too much of this security gate horseshit that's going in for $100,000. That makes me wonder. That makes me wonder. It makes me a little ill.
There was also a security guard today when we were driving by, who's patrolling the outside area.
The no impact zone.
The no impact zone.
Right.
But he wasn't having much.
No civil liberties zone. Yeah.
He was not having much of an impact on the no impact zone. He seemed to be just kind of meandering back and forth.
I mean, it sounds, in a way, this is both good and bad. I mean, it sounds like the Monica Martinez, who is the executive director of this Homeless Lack of Services Center, is engaging to some extent in token smiley-wily behavior around this stuff. In other words, she's saying to Take Back Santa Cruz types and to Mayor Robinson and former Mayor Bryant and the folks on the shitty council, as I like to call them on occasion in my adolescent way, see, we're doing this. We got security guards. We got fences. We're going to do an ID program. We're very concerned about all this stuff.
There's a tremendous amount of effort that goes into perception, okay? But the problem is that you can try to create a perception, but the perception and what actually works can be significantly different. And I think that's what's going on right now at HSC.
And ironically, that's also what's going on the other side of the political spectrum, although the HSC is not very left if you talk about, you know, people that are actively concerned with equality of treatment and equality of resources and, you know, new kinds of services that actually attempt to really meet the needs of the majority of homeless people. But they have some, you know, they kind of, they're token efforts, a little bit more than token efforts in that direction. But on the right, you have this also, this call for public safety, or what they mean is that they're talking about the perception of public safety. Of course, they've generated the hysteria that has created this perception, which is to say, needle mania, look at all these crime figures, homeless people's citations are way up, and they take, what, 30 or 40% of the police calls? Of course, because the people who are calling the police are calling homeless people on the crimes created by the police department through the city council for camping, being in a park after dark, sitting near a building, and so forth.
You know what's kind of interesting? The individual that I was with and myself, when we drove through or drove by homeless service center, we were talking with one of the employees. We asked her about the gate. We hear you're putting in a gate to do what? And she said, I have no clue. And I said, well, what's it going to do? Or, I mean, what's the purpose of it? Do you think it's going to work? And she said, no, it's not going to work. It's not going to do anything. And we asked, you know, well, what's the intent? And I guess apparently the intent is to keep the criminal element off the campus. Those were her words.
You mean the upper-level bureaucrats who are kind of siphoning off the money? That's going to be difficult. I mean, they're going to have to, these guys are pretty, and these women are pretty shifty types.
Well,
they can wear business suits at times.
They're going to have a card, actually. So,
I see.
So what's going to have to happen is you're going to have to be a card-carrying homeless person.
A card-carrying homeless person.
To enter the campus, which I find...
I love that campus word that you've been using for years. I think, you know, someone would say the camp or the, you know, the... I don't know what the hell it is. It's not a campus. You're not learning anything there.
You give me a word and I'll use it.
Complex?
Complex. Okay. So the
bunch of decrepit buildings with a bunch of... they're not really overpaid. I don't think the staff is really overpaid.
No.
But the money that's going there is not getting to homeless services. It's getting to buildings and other things. I mean, I hear that the... And correct me if I'm wrong. Maybe you've heard more. But it's been said to me recently by an individual who's doing Public Records Act requests to try to find out what's going on, that the Rebele Family Shelter, which is the largest and newest building in the area, which is supposed to house 29 families, is generally half empty, but I don't know if that's true. I've heard conflicting stories. Do you have any word on that one?
I don't know. I don't have any information on that whatsoever. Uh-huh. I know it's a 6 month transitional. It's a 6 month transitional family housing program. The issue now is that HUD is moving away from transitional housing, and so. The Rebele Family Shelter may end up being more of a permanent type of shelter for families. That's just speculation on my part because I know HUD's changing their approach. And to be honest with you, 6 months is not enough time for a family to stabilize and to achieve permanent housing. I was reading today on the HSC website that 80% of clients who matriculate through Homeless Services Center achieve permanent housing, and I'd really like to see how they came up with that number. I can't.
Now, where did you read this figure?
This was on the. I was reading the Homeless Services Center.
Well, maybe matriculate means the 3% of the people that get through the program that attain their matriculation certificates.
It could be.
I mean, if you got to have a card to get in, maybe you got to have a certificate to get out. You know, I mean,
80% is an astronomical figure for taking persons who are chronically homeless and placing them into some sort of permanent housing or permanent shelter. I find it disingenuous at best and dishonest at worst.
Subtle distinctions here. You're tuned to the to Free Radio on the air, I think, at 101.3 FM. Not very strongly on the air when I came into the studio, but I think we are on the air. And that is only going to be for a while until we need actually another place to locate. So if you actually know of a place in the downtown or the general Santa Cruz area where we can actually set up a transmitter, it can be all we need is a place to set up an antenna and a transmitter, and it's, you know, we'll be in much better shape. Right now, we're really on a very tentative basis. At any time, this could be ended. And I think, by the way, we are. If you've been having trouble hearing Doug Loisel, our guest, it's because I've had his mic down for the last 20 minutes. But he's got a strong voice, and I guess you may have heard him distantly in the background. Now, however, I've turned up his mic, and hopefully, when he's not busy conferring with other secret members of the studio audience at the moment, he will be able to get back on the air with us. But if you want to call in and ask questions of Doug or of me or make comments of your own about what you've heard, the call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. I encourage you to do so because... Hey, that's what we're here for, 427-3772. If you have any breaking news, I'm hearing some strange stories around town. Like I heard one, I was awakened from sleep yesterday by a phone call reporting a story that was still a secondhand story that the police had tased a man in the metro. The security guard had tased a man in the metro having to do with some questionable behavior on his part, or maybe just, I don't know what. I've had bizarre relations with the metro authorities at different points. They arrested me at one point for talking to homeless people and then refusing to leave, even though it was daytime. I was outside in front of the metro center. I wasn't doing anything. Well, it was because they later claimed I was blocking the 7-foot-long metro sign in front of the metro center. They didn't say that at the time, but they did say that later. So there's sort of someone creative in that metro office. You got to hand it to them. In any case, this person supposedly was tased, and again, I don't know if this is true. Cell phones were being confiscated by the private security guards of the metro in order to do what? I suppose to cover up their act would be my cynical suggestion. But, you know, maybe they had some broader purpose, like, I don't know, making sure everybody has a working cell phone or possibly maybe replacing cell phones with upgrading them. If this actually happened. If anybody has any news about whether this actually happened, please call in. I don't know that it did. I just heard a rumor that it did. I also have been told that Jasmine Byron and her husband have turned in their concerns to the police department about the gun-drawn, don't-try-to-leave-with-your-food behavior of Officer Hernandez at the Salvation Army November 26th Thanksgiving meal. That's we heard her talking about that on the air about a month ago, and that one was kind of a doozy. I still haven't been able to get more information on that from the. Well, I frankly haven't gone to the Salvation Army to do any interviews on that subject. But there was this homeless memorial today, and I know that some listeners may have been to it. I understand that one individual stood up and gave a very eloquent demand that that authorities open warming centers, and if they didn't, that people themselves get together and do what I suggested, or perhaps something similar to what I suggested, which is establish warming centers themselves, and that was received favorable treatment or notice, or what, the guy was not immediately hauled off and tased for saying so at the homeless memorial of the dead. I was at the one last year or the year before, and it was I think I even recorded some of it. I think it was indoors last year. This year, I think it was out. I'm not sure it was indoors or outdoors this year, but it was. It's traditionally held in the dining area, and there are sort of pious comments made, and little candles are lit, and people come up and they remember the people they've lost, and you know that's what people do when other people die, and you know I can understand that, except when it's turned into a ritual and a sort of a. I don't know, a prettying up ceremony, although you don't really pretty up death that way, but you make it appear that there's a kind of concern. I heard that I think really does not exist. It's a form of hypocrisy of a certain kind. I think it should be, if people are really concerned about the name of the homeless dead, they should announce them every month, why they died, how they died, and what kind of provisions can be made to address those problems in the future. You didn't do that, Doug, when you were on the Homeless Lack of Service Center director. You were in that position. Why not?
I think I missed
it. Hold it. Let's turn up your mic. Now I can actually hear you.
I think the 7 months I was there, I missed the window. It must have been in that other 5 months. So what,
nobody died in the outside in the 7 months. I can't believe that.
Oh! I see what you're saying.
In other words, every month there should have been a reading of the names of the dead, not once a year. It's sort of like we'll feed people at Christmas and Thanksgiving. And by the way, there's supposed to be a Christmas meal by the Homes Food Not Bombs group in front of the post office on Christmas Day. Everybody else is crapped out on that one. Go ahead.
Well, I have nothing to say other than.
Guilty, guilty, guilty.
Guilty, Your Honor.
Guilty as charged. Yes.
Yes.
Well, at least you're honest about it. Monica will smile and say, "I won't talk to you," and then moves on. That's her sort of approach.
Yeah.
Did you have a chat with Monica today when you stopped by?
I have never met Monica. I'd like to meet her. I tried to friend her on LinkedIn, and she wouldn't friend me, so I felt
Well, I don't friend anybody on LinkedIn either. I think it sucks, but try sending her an email. I'll give you her email address.
Yeah, I can get her email address.
Not that it would necessarily do you much good.
What should I ask her?
Ask for forgiveness for ever coming on the program here. And, I don't know what you should ask her. You might just, you know, ask how things are going. You know that you've been. Of course, I don't know. She may regard you as the pariah of the area. You know, I mean, well, tell her you have some concerns about. I guess you could ask her some substantive questions about specifics. I mean, you just figure about 80% graduating. You're really impressed, and you'd like to know, where these people have gone, and is this happening, you know, generally, or was it just one special year's figures? You could make that as a sort of a request.
Yeah, she won't talk to you.
Well, the last time I tried to talk to her was at the task force meeting, as I call it, the public hysteria task force meeting, known more generally as the public safety task force meeting at city council, where they rubber stamped these recommendations and said they were proceeding with them in January, in spite of some useful commentary by Don Lane and Micah Posner suggesting that not every homeless person was a perverted, needle-using, crapping everywhere they go individual, and who had to be viewed with suspicion and driven out of the area. Again, I am exaggerating what Take Back Santa Cruz and what the task force people say, but it tends in that direction is the problem. It tends to suggests that individuals who sleep outside are criminals by the very act of sleeping outside, which, of course, is preposterous.
Some of it ties into indoor and outdoor substance use, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's a huge distinction that law enforcement makes. Indoor substance use, acceptable. Outdoor substance use, unacceptable. And so, although indoor and outdoor substance abuse research indicates that it's about the same.
You speak as a person who's researched this yourself or been reading reports?
Research.
You mean original research or you read reports?
Read research.
You read research?
Research. I am a doctor.
You may be a doctor. I don't give a shit if you're a doctor. Have you been going to groups? Have you personally done any kind of surveys, or have you just examined the literature and done some...
A literature review.
Fair enough. All right. We don't want to give you any false credit here.
Okay.
Or disparage you in any way that's inappropriate.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Allow me.
Please.
Indoor and outdoor substance use takes place at about the same rate, but outdoor... substance abuse arrests are obviously significantly higher, and that ties into the whole homelessness is criminalizing of homelessness, et cetera, et cetera. But I was going to ask you actually before we got on that: have you asked Monica to be on the show?
You know, that's a good question. I know that I have asked her for information that she's declined to give me repeatedly, and
what information was that? I'm sorry to cut you off.
This was about that's perfectly right. I appreciate the interrupting because you're trying to clarify. 2 or 3 years ago, 2010 actually, when Peace Camp 2010 was in front of the county building, a group of activists who actually set up a 24-hour bathroom in the spirit of Doug Loiselle to provide for people at the protest, as well as people who wanted to come by and use it. This is when there was no sleeping. Well, as tonight, there's no place for the overwhelming majority of homeless people to go. There's place 100 places in the Armory, 46 in the Pauley Loft. I don't know, scattered spaces elsewhere, but no more than 200 spaces throughout the city area as, you know, legal sleeping spaces, and 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people out there. We attempted to get figures as part of Peace Camp 2010 from the board of directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And Monica Martinez was currently the executive director. And we went to, I think we went to Letitia Schwartz as well. She was right there. And we, Ed Fry and I and Linda LeMaster, three of us, went in and said, we want four things, or I wanted four things, I know. I wanted a statement from the Homeless Lack of Services Center that there was shelter for only 5 or 10% of the homeless population that night. Two, that they were full every night, substantially. That was just how it was. And there were two other things that I wanted that don't immediately come to mind. But these were obvious things we needed because this county, the city, it was actually the deputies, were trying to prosecute people, and did.
Right.
One man was jailed for 2 years for sleeping on a bench
right. The
next year in front of the county building. Linda LeMaster was given a suspended sentence. Well, I think she ended up with a fine, but she could have faced up to a year in jail, and did, in a jury trial. And Martinez and others, essentially, one, it's hard to say, and perhaps not fair to say, they perjured themselves or falsely testified in court, but they gave the misimpression that there was always some kind of space available, and if somebody wanted it, they could come and get it, and so it gave the misimpression that this really was some sort of either grandstanding, or it wasn't really a necessity defense appropriate. That was both she and the head of the River Street shelter made testimony that put people in a position of being convicted of what's called illegal lodging, which is a misdemeanor crime under the penal code. And has been used to go after activists. I've been charged with it in the past, and they've always dropped the charges because I've always said, good, take me to jury trial. I'll do what I can with that. We'll see how we can go with that, which is actually not always a good thing to do. One time I did go to jury trial in San Francisco. I was found guilty and then had to serve a month in jail for serving people free food. But then again, because I was in jail, people served food on the steps of the jail, and they ended up ending the feeding ban. So that was kind of good. That worked. That was pretty good.
Right.
With Food Not Bonds.
From my experience, my 7 months, we were full all the time. There was really no space available. The only space that might have been available would be Paige Smith, and the only reason why there would be space available there is because there was a waiting period to get in. There was some screening that had to go on.
Smith is a 6-month program nearby.
It's an 18-month
program. 18-month program.
Yeah.
But not the Pauley Loft, which is...
Pauley Loft is just emergency shelter. I believe it's 46.
40, I think it's 46 beds
46
now.
Beds. Always full. Always full.
Waiting list of six weeks or something
and
like
in
that.
In fact, I do believe that I had a couple of people writing letters stating that because clients had been cited for sleeping outside, coming to the shelter and saying, I came to the shelter, I'm on the waiting list. We would write them letters stating that so that they could take it back to law enforcement and say, look, you know, there's just really no place for us to sleep. There's nothing we can do.
There was another...
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, you know, the other thing that... and I think that we had this discussion way back when, you know, you were kind of, antagonizing me a little bit when I first started... I think you were saying, I can come on the campus anytime I want to. I can set up a booth there, and I said sure. And then the other thing that you asked for was to see the budget, and I said sure. You can see the budget. And I believe it, with nonprofits, there needs to be that level of transparency, that you should not just see the annual report, because the annual report will have a little pie chart at the end, and it'll say, you know, this much went to this much, this one. You should actually be able to see with all nonprofits, including Homeless Services Center, line by line budget items. You should be able to see how much they're spending on food, how much everybody's getting paid, what they're spending on staples, what they're spending on gasoline, you know, car upkeep. I am a firm believer in that level of transparency. And I think that, as I recall, way back in the day, you know, I offered to show you that stuff, and I don't think we ever got there, but I think that's important.
You know, it's interesting. There are some people who are kind of taking a deeper approach to the what they see as the corruption and the homeless lack of services center, the failure of funding to reach homeless people, and the I'm not sure if it quite. I mean, I think I'm thinking of John Colby's Public Records Act request, and he's requested me to ask you numerous questions, and I asked you to look over some of his stuff before the program began. I also tried to get two other activists, Becky Johnston and Linda LeMaster, to review some of his concerns, which I've read some of his stuff, and I've got to admit some of it's kind of deep for me, and for me to give intelligent responses without really understanding it. John's a passionate guy. Mm-hmm. He has been working on advocating for not just theoretically everybody should have civil rights, but particular people. He advocates for particular disabled people.
Right.
And I have a lot of regard for that. I think part of it is his passion for justice. He wants to see them have justice, and he wants to see change, not yesterday, I mean, not tomorrow, but yesterday, mm-hmm. which I also have some sympathy for. He had some questions that he wanted me to ask you, but you may have seen some of his questions and his writing.
Yeah.
While I scrounge around, try to pull that stuff up here, any comments on what you have read, any thoughts about any of that? I'm sorry to be so vague. I apologize to John, too.
there was a lot of information there. There was a lot to glean through at work today while I was supposed to be working on some other stuff. So...
You ducked the bullet, in other words.
Yeah, I did read through it. I just don't remember the particulars. And I was actually hoping you'd ask me some specific questions, and that could jog my memory.
Let's see.
I think we're both somewhat failing at this moment.
Let's see if I can... List of questions. Here we go. For your interview. And I immediately wrote him back saying, fat chance, John. You know, I mean, but let's see what I got. Maybe I can actually just verbatim read off some of this. And
sure.
You may not. I don't think you're going to know a lot of this, and I don't know how. One of the problems is I don't know how meaningful it's going to be to the audience. These are questions that maybe you can consider later, and maybe try to respond to.
Well, maybe we can look at them in a general sense.
Let's see what we can do here. First question is, and this has to do with the fact John has been. Describes being driven out of Santa Cruz by the John Stewart Company and sort of a combination of police department and management thuggery, mismanagement of the Mission Street apartments, Mission Garden apartments. I have no love of the John Stewart Company. I've heard bad things about them from mm-hmm. different apartment complexes. Mm-hmm. But as to the merits, the truth of, and the accuracy of John's particular concerns, I can't really say in terms of any direct information. And, you know, much as I appreciate John's work, it's hard to, as a commentator, simply, you know, swallow what somebody one person gives you if you haven't done independent research. And since I'm too lazy or too preoccupied to do that kind of research, it puts me in a position where I go, well, I don't know, you know, it's what he says, but, you know. So that may not be fair to John, but his question is this. The Mission Gardens Apartments is a 50-unit apartment complex right. of permanent structures, 20 large one-bedroom apartments, 14 large two-bedroom apartments, and 8 very large three-bedroom apartments, including a community building and a park. Why was CCH, that's Citizens Committee for the mm-hmm. Homeless, transitional housing for 39 transitional units of prefabs and manufactured housing funded with more money than Cal IFA loaned to build mission gardens? It's a very technical question, which, you know, is also rather obscure, I think, to most people. He's talking about the Page Smith
right.
Community House. Those were the trailers. That was the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's transitional housing. And I think he may be referring to the upgrade of that Page Smith Community House, which was recently upgraded.
Right.
And so, if you understand the question, can you put it into common English for kind of idiots like me? And then give me an answer, will you?
I feel like we're talking about derivatives.
Yeah.
So it's my understanding that those 39 structures were not new when they were put on to the campus. That's where I can start from.
The original ones or the new ones?
The original ones.
I think that's true. I remember that's true. That was back in 1997 or some such thing.
Right. And I don't believe that they were replaced. I believe that they were upgraded. Or were they replaced?
I am not sure. It was recently done, and I can't say.
What I can say is that when I was there, I know that they were in poor condition, and I knew that we were going to need to either replace them or we were going to need to significantly improve them. I was looking at some grant opportunities to actually replace them with new prefabricated homes, which are really quite beautiful. The prefabs now are not your double wide, you know, mom
right.
and pa sitting on the front porch anymore. I mean, they're beautiful. And so we were looking into some grant opportunities and some capital opportunities to replace all the units. His questions were kind of implying strong, I don't know if strongly is the right word, but they were implying that there were fiscal improprieties.
But what he's saying here that I get from this question is, look at the incredible 50-unit apartment complex that was created over at Mission Gardens Apartment, and yet more money was given to the Homeless Lack of Services Center replacement, the Page Smith Community House replacement, and what do you got? A bunch of crap, not maybe better, but certainly crappier than large two-bedroom apartments, a large one-bedroom apartment, eight very large three-bedroom apartments. In other words, the money is being mismanaged if more money is being spent on trailers than on decent apartments over in, at Mission Gardens. That's, I guess, the clue. Is that what he's saying?
I'm going to have to somewhat disagree with that.
Maybe I'm misunderstanding it.
Because I disagree with the premise. Because when you have a development, and I've done developments before. I did a $9 million development, a $5 million development, a couple of other different capital projects. And you're receiving money from either the federal government, state government, local governments. It's a fairly closely monitored. And so if we're talking about mismanagement of large sums of money in regards to capital projects, it's fairly unlikely that that occurred.
Well, it's not. I think it's more like he's saying, look at the huge amount of money. I mean, look at the huge amount of product that an even lesser amount of money creates. Why such a low product for such a high cost?
Well, they're stupid. There's stupid construction ideas too, right?
Or there's corrupt construction ideas too.
I wouldn't necessarily say corrupt.
Well, either they're one or the other. I mean, it can be both too.
Or one or the other, or both. not necessarily corrupt, but ideas that sound good initially that may run into more money later on. So, for example, I've got 39 units, and somebody says, I'm gonna donate these 39 units to you. That's great, okay? So you're going to get all this free housing. But then in reality, you've got to create the pads. You've got to create the infrastructure. You've got to put in the plumbing. You've got to get a crane out there to put these things on the campus.
Well, I hear you. But look at this, Doug. I mean, if he's right, I've been to the Mission Gardens apartments. I don't have a really clear they're clearly better than the Page Smith stuff.
Sure.
And the question is, if they're spending more money on Page Smith than they would be, there's been a rise in inflation and the cost of building, because one was built considerably before. That was his first question. Let's move on from that.
Well, do we know what the cost differential was?
I don't know. It's not in this question.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is that if we knew the cost differential, we'd be able to determine.
All right, Colby, get the cost differential. We want that. Where did all the money go, he asked. So I think your advisor has given you a thought. What did you want to? We have some secret conversations going on in the studio, folks. I wish you were here. This is incredible. But it's going to be. We may be learning some pretty top secret stuff. So.
Well, they did put a recuperative bed program in.
Yeah, I read that today. Yeah. That there was a $1.3 million, I'm not sure, $1.3 million or $13 million, I wasn't sure which.
Probably $1.3 million. They put in the recuperative bed, so maybe that, and because of the high cost of medical equipment, et cetera, maybe that contributed to this differential.
Expensive.
It's a whole building.
And that was a part of Page Smith. Oh, I see. Okay,
yeah.
So we're getting some information here from a secret source, which later I may divulge if given permission. Otherwise, I'd have to kill myself, which is not an option at this time. This is the third question. Who is Carol Shannon? And nobody knows who Carol Shannon is. I've never heard of her. Probably have, but I don't know who she is. She represented herself as the executive director of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. At the time, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless made an agreement with the city of Santa Cruz to receive about $500,000 zero-interest loan and a HUD home block grant in exchange for CCH granting the city property at 109 Coral Street, 733 River Street. This is, of course, I think we're talking the 80s and the early 90s, and you guys weren't around then. I was, but I was certainly not privy to or actually terribly interested in, perhaps I should have been, these kinds of financial dealings. Who were the members and executive directors of the CCH? Well, I think that's public record. I don't have it. I think Becky Johnson was on the board of directors of the CCH at that time before she resigned because the CCH was doing things like trying to arrest or expel activists like myself from their meetings when we came and said, hey, baby, why are you arresting homeless people on your property and that sort of thing. It appears that the CCH received the property from the UC Regents. Why did the UC Regents once own this property? I vaguely remember this. The Regents did own the piece of property at one, what is now 115 Coral Street, and with the corner there, that whole piece of property.
Right.
And activists like Calamity Jane Immler and Lighthouse Linda LeMaster and Sidewalk Shannon Kasamo held hunger strikes in order to get the county and the city to open up a cold and rainy night shelter and end the sleeping ban in 1985, many, many years ago. And then the next year, they opened up, I guess the shelter got opened up thanks to Bob Listener for one winter at the what is now the Cumbois Jazz Center. That was the first cold and rainy night shelter. But it only lasted for that brief period of time. And the next winter, the same problem rose. And there was some deal going on blocked by Marty Wormhout, who was then, I don't think she was mayor at the time, but she was Laird. And these pseudo-progressives were never any good on homeless issues. They were all bad. I mean, they can call themselves, socialists. Rotkin can say whatever he wants. But the fact is, they were both bad then and worse now, unfortunately. So this is information that possibly somebody else would have, but I don't think you would have, unless I'm wrong. Have you been researching the origins of the property at the River Street and the?
Well, I know that I know the corner where Page Smith was somewhat of just a field, and apparently there was a HPHP.
There was a house there that is now the River Street Shelter.
Right.
There was a smaller house.
And then it was a
UCSC piece of property.
Right, and there was a high concentration of homeless persons there, and I think Paul Lee got involved in it somehow with the homeless garden project, and then they decided to go ahead and put the trailers on because they figured, well, let's just convert this area since
the homeless garden project wasn't involved. They owned the field next to the River Street Shelter. The River Street Shelter was owned by the city after it bought it from the University of California.
Okay.
CCH owned the property next door. I know because I was arrested on that property for sleeping with homeless people twice, once in 1988 and another time in 1991. We asked them to open it up to homeless people. It was actually one of the few places where you could sleep without violating the camping ordinance because it was behind a fence in a backyard, and it was kind of an exception. And for a time, thanks to an arrangement between the assistant chief of police, a guy called Dunbow, and the former director of the Homeless Community Resource Center, which preceded the Homeless Services Center called, that's what it was called, and her name was Karen Gillette. There was a tolerated campground there for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They called it the Back 40.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's what that was about. But that doesn't get to any of the questions that old John is asking here. Let's see if we can go on to the next one. It appears CCH received this property from the UC Regents. Why did the UC Regents once own this property? I have no idea, John, and I doubt you do. Now, see, these are questions, unfortunately, that... don't illuminate the kinds of subjects I'm interested in on my show, Colby. All right, moving along. Who is CJ Investments? He wants to know. They were the trustees of the deed. And so he does very, very elaborate research, trying to find out the origins of things, which I respect, but which really is not radio-worthy. Mercy Charities Housing, he says, question number 7, was required to administer the project. Why did the city make CCH hire Mercy Charities Housing as the administrator for the transitional housing project? Well, Mercy Charities Housing is a group controlled by Catholic Charities West or something. I denounced them repeatedly at city council because they started the project called the Nueva Vista Project, then known as the Dolphin Lee Project, in the Beach Flats. This was a huge amount of money which tore down existing apartments and built better ones, but it's what they should have done was buy a new piece of property, keep the old apartments, and have additional housing, or else give the tenants guarantees they could get into the housing, and they wouldn't do either. Instead, they had their little project, which was Catherine Byers' pet baby, and she proceeded to ram it through, and I was actually... I think that was when Mayor Fitzmaurice became extremely upset with me because I was, I think at one point when I was making I came on and I said, this is a wonderful project to spend all this wonderful money. What we don't need, it's really, I use this Indian accent, he denounced me as being a racist and walked out of the room, taking the city council with him. It was quite an impressive moment. I didn't know I was so powerful at that time. But we weren't able to get those guarantees, although I understand our pressure did, I think, prevent them from doing worse than they could have done. Mercy Charities Housing was required to administer the project. Why did the city make CCH hire Mercy Charities Housing? I don't think you know any of this. I don't either. What exactly did Mercy Charities Housing? I'm afraid that these are questions which they may well be relevant, and I would encourage you, if you have any answers to them, and you've seen them, I think I forwarded them to you.
Yeah, you did.
You might have some, you know, questions about that. What we really want, however, are questions about... answers from you about what do you think of, we've already talked about the security gate. There are claims that, and I've heard this from Steve Plaich, who unfortunately is becoming more and more right-wing, and maybe I can call him on the phone and have him to get him involved in this discussion. He hasn't answered a phone call from this show for months, I think, maybe once. He claims he's talked to homeless people from the Page Smith Community House, and they are upset about drug dealing in the homeless lack of services center area at the Bay, the Paul Lee Loft, and that they're also afraid, there's a concern that disabled people are being strong-armed out of their money, their security checks, or, you know, they're being sucked into drug deals. What's your experience? You were there for 7 months. Did you see a lot of this happening? Is it a real problem? What's the deal?
You know, I wouldn't consider it happens. Yeah, of course it happens. And although I would not necessarily consider it a serious problem, which is kind of maybe an oxymoron, in that there's going to be drug dealing in a situation like that. Drugs are part of society. Drugs are part of the homeless community. I don't think that's anything that is a mystery. You're going to have drug dealing that goes on your campus to the amount that you can mitigate it. I think that it would be a situation you would, you know,
So you tolerate the mic. You confess here on the air.
It's a complex.
Yes, good point. I think I said that before, didn't I?
The same amount of... There's no distinction. There's no distinction between drug dealing or drug usage, et cetera, that's going on the complex versus 50 yards from the complex versus 150 yards.
We don't want their kind in our neighborhood. Get rid of the homeless lack of services center. This is the claim of a number of groups, including, although Mayor Robinson, Rattlesnake Robinson, as I affectionately call her, she's kind of insisted that she's been really saying this, but that certainly is what some of her supporters are saying. What's your response to this?
Well, if you want drug usage and drug dealing contained, wouldn't it make more sense to have it on the complex rather than off the complex? Number one. Number two.
Enforce all laws more harshly. That, of course, is the cry of the Public Lack of Safety Hysteria Committee, which task force, actually.
Go right. Ahead. So you're going to have drug dealing and you're going to have drug usage on the complex, off the complex, around the complex, in the Poganip, down at the beach. It is what it is, you know. To say that it's concentrated in that area.
Let's move from drug dealing.
To say that it's concentrated in that area and that it is a higher problem in that area or a more intense or chronic problem in that area is just inaccurate.
Well, there are people tend to congest in that area, so it might be reasonable to say that because there's a more density of people, because people come there, that's where people gather, and that's where you find it. But the real issue is not whether personal use of drugs, even personal sale of drugs, but violence and intimidation around drug sales, use, and... that's the issue. Now, what about that? Did that come up as a problem in your 7 months?
No.
And I see your assistant here is telling you that that's not been the case
It's not been the case at all. There was a couple of instances where we heard that there was an individual who was selling stuff off a cart. As soon as we found out that he was selling alcohol off the cart, and as soon as we found out that he was somewhat pressuring people to pay him certain amounts of money, he was gone. That was it. So,
and we hear from the side from your assistant
he's still there.
So you weren't effective in getting rid of him.
Apparently not.
Well, I think we have only the city to blame for ousting you. Or what was he gone during the period of time when Doug was?
Yeah,
he was around there in the impact zone.
Right. And again, you know, my case in point is that you're right. There is a concentration of people in that area, yet it's happening everywhere.
My concern has always been about issues like lack of due process, favoritism, the concern about the management with maintaining an image that panders to right-wing sensibilities. So, for example, they don't want to say we don't have we can only serve 5% of the population, and we're essentially doing a token job or a very, very limited job, because this might discourage, I don't know, you would think it might encourage donors, but actually, you know, for in the eyes of some, perhaps Monica Martinez, it discourages donors unless you're doing a wonderful bang-up 80% success job. You know, that means, we better send more money there. My concerns have always been different than those that are currently being touted about, and which will be coming up next month as the task force's recommendations hit city council like shit through a goose, pretty much, is the way I suspect they're going to be coming. Although we've heard some people say, no, Don Lane and Micah Posner made sure. No, they didn't make sure of anything. And they've been empowering this kind of stuff, in my view, through supporting the criminalization of homeless people. That was an issue that I brought up with you, and I think we may have disagreed on. I wanted you, I don't know, did you ever come out opposing the sleeping ban publicly?
Yeah, I am now.
What about then, when you were the executive director? That would be more important.
You know, when you're the executive director of a shelter like HSC, you're striking a balance between business interest and your client's interest. And so it's delicate.
Dear, dear, this has a very unpleasant, familiar ring to it. I got to say that Ken Cole, the first director of this homeless lack of services center, initially was very outspoken against the sleeping van.
Right.
He later changed. However, while he was initially director, he was quite... Of course, it's also true that the Downtown Association and others unanimously agreed in 1999 on the city's homeless issues task force that the whole camping ordinance should be scrapped. That it was wrong, given the shelter emergencies and the shelter shortage. It was just bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was amazing to me that people who are on the Downtown Association would come back with this, because they are notoriously conservative. So I can understand how Ken Cole might, you know, feel more comfortable saying, I oppose the sleeping ban. I oppose the whole camping ban. Not just the part that says you can't sleep after 11, but everything involving camping and sleeping. I mean, regulated camping, yes, but... camping ban, no. And but you would have to say you can't say that, but you couldn't say that when you were on the 7 months. It doesn't really matter that now, but Monica Martinez has been, I've asked her to do the same thing, and I don't think I've gotten a response other than I'm too busy to talk to you, you know.
Well, I think I think in 2008, when the economy kind of collapsed, I think people were looking for some way to justify this, something to fix, to rectify the situation. The sleeping ban, homelessness, it's an easy target. You know, it's cutting into our commerce. We can't have all these homeless people downtown. We can't have all these people sleeping everywhere. We're losing our businesses, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there was a heightened level of paranoia right around that time. I don't know how it is now. Certainly I've changed I can speak more openly now, now that I'm not economically dependent on.
Well, let me ask you
situation.
A question about your current job. I mean, sure. you're working with a methadone clinic.
Correct.
You favor injection and inhalation centers like Vancouver has and some European countries do, where people can go and shoot up or inhale their drugs.
Absolutely.
Have you publicly come out and stated that?
Yes.
Well, you're doing so now, of course.
Wait, did I say that? No.
Oh, there you go, folks. He's on tape, or at least on an audio file.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be a difficult task to...
Politically, you mean?
Politically, to make that happen. But absolutely, I am in
favor. Do you have any
new
information about the success of such programs in Europe and in Vancouver?
As far as
inhalation and injection centers for, you know, heroin, methadrine, cocaine,
you know,
aspirin, whatever.
Yeah, those programs are successful. They're successful on a whole number of different
research
levels.
Wise, or are you talking ideology wise? Because you think you like their programs. What's the deal here?
Research wise.
Yeah, research. What's the last research you've done on this?
Well, basically. What you get, and I can't cite the authors, but I will next time I'm on the show.
What's the date, more or less, of these studies or these reports you're basing?
Recent, 2011, 2012, 2010.
Uh-huh.
These reports indicate that, and you, it's intuitive as well, but these reports indicate that when you have a safe environment, a harm reduction environment where people can use and use clean needles, use in a certain area, basically what you get is significantly less bacterial infections, which means significantly less hospital room visits. You give people more opportunity to ultimately achieve sobriety if that's their goal.
What about drug users flocking to these areas? As we know, according to Takeover Santa Cruz, they flock to Santa Cruz because of the wonderful lack of service. I mean, the wonderful services at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, because of the druggy climate, because of the anything goes, keep Santa Cruz weird climate. Isn't that been encouraged by these kinds of inhalation and injection centers?
I think there's three reasons why people come to why homeless might gravitate towards Santa Cruz, right? Number one, the weather. It's beautiful. and it's a beautiful place to live. Just the same reason we all want to live here is the same reason that a homeless person might want to live here. Two, there is an availability of drugs here in Santa Cruz, okay? And that,
so you, you think that is one of the reasons people come to Santa Cruz?
Sure.
For the drugs?
I think there's an availability of drugs here that you might not get in other places like Boise, Idaho.
Well, what about, let's say, as compared with, I don't know, San Luis Obispo, Palo Alto, San Jose, San Francisco?
I think there's a higher availability of drugs here. That's my opinion. That's not research. The third reason is that when you have an established population, okay. So why did we have at the turn of the century, you know, little Italy, little Poland, little Russia, Jewish communities? Because people will gravitate towards people that they feel comfortable with, and because there's already an existing homeless population here, people will come to a place like this because they feel that there's a level of camaraderie or comfort with like-minded, like persons. We gravitate towards that. So I think that I don't believe that it's the massive amount of homeless services that are available in Santa Cruz that has anything to do with the homeless coming here, or this being a homeless quote-unquote magnet. It's a nice place to live.
It's a beautiful place to live in many ways.
And, although, you know, we dehumanize the homeless persons to the extent that we don't even acknowledge the fact that they appreciate beauty on the same level that we appreciate beauty. So this dehumanization, I mean, why wouldn't you live in Santa Cruz? It's beautiful. The people are kind, well, for the most part. There's a lot to do here. You've got the ocean, you've got the mountains, all the same things. We act like a homeless person isn't going to have any of those experiences, that they're not going to appreciate a sunset, right? Or a beautiful sunny day, or even a rainy day. And so I just think that we pretend that there's some sort of robotic nature to the homeless person.
Well, the next statement that always follows this, or that can follow this, is it costs money to live in Santa Cruz. So you get these people coming to Santa Cruz. They don't have any money. They think they can just live off of all this free shit that is being thrown out by crazy liberals who just want to, you know, this is dumb compassion. We've got to be smartly compassionate.
Well, where do you think the salaries for the Homeless Services Center employees come from? Where do you think that comes from? Besides a small percentage is private donations.
It is squeezed from the hands of taxpayers by misguided liberal city council members.
And where do these taxpayers live?
Well, the taxpayers, of course, are here in Santa Cruz, and that's one of the sad things we're faced with.
And where else?
Well, in the county, perhaps.
And where else?
Well, what's your point?
The point is that... most of the money that comes into HSC comes through Sacramento, right?
So they're funding the drug-dealing homeless lack of services center through Sacramento? Is that what you're saying?
The federal government and the state government are dumping money into Santa Cruz, and people forget that piece, right? Where do you think HUD comes from? HUD's a federal program, right? So if the Reveille Family Center gets money from HUD, we're getting money from all over the United States being funneled into the community. Right.
Oh, I certainly agree with you. And switching from my role as a, shall we say, caricatured right wing ideologue, and I really should have somebody in the studio who is an intelligent, impassioned, and sincere individual who has these beliefs that I think are not beliefs I share. In fact, they're bullshit and bigoted beliefs, in my view. But who can honestly represent them? And I don't. So all you Take Back Santa Cruz people listening, please do call in, 427-3772. You can talk with Doug Loisel, and he has a team, a support team here that is willing to defend him. So don't be afraid of hurting his feelings. Don't be afraid of calling him out for the drug-dealing, sex-perverted junkie that he is. This is your opportunity, 427-3772. I myself will, mediate any disputes. Ethan Berman, if you're listening, get off your fucking high pedestal and come on, give us a call. We're waiting here on the air, 427-3772. And I've unfortunately found recently that I haven't been getting any calls. So we may be talking to a very select group of the most exclusive individuals, amounting to like 5 or 6 people. You never can tell. But we are being recorded on HuffSantaCruz.org in case you want to review these remarks later for prosecution, perhaps, or other, national security purposes. I got a couple things. If you've got something you want to say, why don't you, if you have a thought you want to say,
do.
Go ahead.
Okay, so back to the economics of home.
You want to say it before we answer the call?
No, go ahead.
An actual phone call. Could this be D.A. Bob Lee calling in? Let's just find out, shall we? You are on Free Radio with Robert and Doug.
Robert, I just wanted to let you know that you are on the air. We are broadcasting with a magnificent 30 watts of effective radiated power.
Very nice, Uncle Dennis. Very nice.
Again, I hear you very clearly down here in the harbor. So.
Well, that's excellent.
So I think you have 6 listeners.
Well, that is a real boost in the arm. We'll be expecting to see you or hear you soon.
See you in a while, Robert. Bye.
Bye-bye. And, of course, Uncle Dennis is the talk show host for From the Cream to the Dregs, which follows this show in 29 minutes. So you can hear all kinds of archaic music if you tune into his show. You are on Free Radio, and thank you for calling in. I'm Robert, and Doug is very well dressed. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm glad you're well dressed. You know, I've been sort of fantasizing what you might look like.
Are you over the age of 18? I want to know that right now.
I am kind of a 70-year-old teenager.
Well, that's called robbing the grave rather than robbing the cradle, I guess.
Yeah, right, exactly. But I got 1 foot on each, and I'm doing a real good cha-cha.
All right, well, you may then present your protestations and your qualifications and possibly, your affections to Doug.
I think that, we really have a hard time not getting negative when we deal with these issues that a reality present to us. But we do need to, see the light side as often as possible, and we need to get a lot more work done. We all need to work together, put our differences beside ourselves, and make this democracy come to life and come to respond to being a human democracy. This is ridiculous. And I know we can do it. I think the revolution is on. I think your guest is one of the greatest persons I've heard on your show ever. Talk to you real soon.
All right. Well, I hope he doesn't outshine me. I mean, that would be rather embarrassing.
That's not possible.
I suppose not.
You just turned my mic off.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was turning it. Well, that comes next if you don't watch your step. So I'm actually, I know that you've been here for a while. Looks like we're going to lose some of our silent supporters here, which may give all you right-wingers, and some of you left-wingers, a chance to give a call in. Still have a chance, 427-3772, if you want to give a shout-out. If you're on the radio, if we're on the radio, and if you like what you hear, if you don't like what you hear, if you have some information to contribute to what you hear, I want to thank our two silent spectators for leaving. No, I mean for staying. As long as they did. Well, next time we're going to want more information. All right. We'll work on it. Thank you. All right. So we lost some people, but we lost in people, we gained in unused space. I guess that's the value of keeping vacant buildings around while homeless people are freezing outside in the cold. I mean, you don't want to damage valuable property. Yeah, but that is a real, I think, a good concern. Anyway, I I want to make a few announcements, and Doug, I want to get your reactions to some of this stuff. So what I'm going to do now is turn you into a co-host, which is a convenient way of sidelining you after you've finished what you want to say, of course.
Sure.
That means you get a chance to kind of weigh in on whatever I'm talking about, but I kind of rush through some stuff that I normally do. But go ahead with your thoughts first.
No, I just I appreciate what the last caller had said. And Tocqueville said that freedom and equality can never coexist. And, you know, I disagree with that. Freedom and equality can coexist. And one of the things that really bothers me is that this idea that business, that we can't have a robust business community and a robust homeless community, that those are mutually exclusive.
Well, let's see if this caller agrees with you. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hi. Sure.
Hello? Turn down your radio or else you will be catching a delay. Turn down your radio or turn down your computer. Are you there?
Hello?
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 Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, so what are your thoughts there, caller?
Can you hear me now, Robert?
I can.
This is Patrick Lancelin.
Oh, Patrick, how are you doing?
I do not want to be interrupted.
Well, go ahead. We'll try not to. I can't promise anything, but please, go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll just do it my way. Let's do it this way. Everyone can tune in to a website that I'm going to put up in 10 minutes.
Okay.
And we can hear it from the back 40. I've been looking at these videos here of you and the rest of this saga, and, you know, folks, we can do better, but it's gone on long enough. This is ridiculous that it should come to this. I hope that the people that are there talking with you do something new. But I'm going to go ahead and put that up with Daryl Darling defending himself about the trailers and the rest of it. I just tuned in a little bit, and I couldn't handle it. I'd shut it off. Turn it back on a little bit to listen, and I'm just going to do it this way, and I'm going to go. So I want to say good luck to the people of Santa Cruz down there. I know you're having a hard time. Stay warm, and you can do better, but you got to step up and do it yourself because nobody's going to help. But I'm thankful that something different may come of it. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Patrick, and feel free to call back, too. Patrick Lancelin is a video journalist who has been around for a long time. He was here also for the Occupy Santa Cruz movement. And I'll be curious to see what he has to post. Patrick, if you can send me an email at rnorris3@hotmail.com, I can pass on the word as to what, I'm sure you can too, as to what you've posted and where it is. And thanks for calalling in spite of your feelings about my style here. And I appreciate your passing on your information. In the studio with me is Doug Loisel, executive director for a time of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I wanted to kind of run through a few things that have happened, at least emails I've gotten, sort of bits and snatches of information that I often bring up. Usually I play people giving me interviews, giving me information from the streets, and I don't really have time to do that. I got about 22 minutes left in the show, and I'll be playing more of that on Sunday, starting at 9:30 in the morning. I will be also having a special guest, Civonomics co-founder Robert, and what the hell is his last name? I'm sorry, Robert, my apologies. It's another Robert, it isn't me. I won't be talking to myself, as I usually do. He has created this process, which I was sharply critical of as being some sort of kiss-ass, Mayor Bryant-loving, let's all be civil while the city council takes away our civil rights approach to things. And he's pointed out that that's not how his objective, that's not his process. He thinks I'm misrepresenting and mischaracterizing with what he calls Civonomics, I believe, and it's been, you know, highlighted in the Good Times this week, I think, and highlighted in the Metro. And Civonomics is a procedure online for putting up issues and then having people vote on them, and have dialogue and discussion about them, which is certainly a good thing. what I didn't like was his approach where he started by saying that he'd seen the angry crowd reaction to city council's sidewalk shrinkage ordinances that they passed last month to essentially make street performing almost a discretionary police matter. Instead of, you know, acknowledging that people have rights to perform on the streets and to vend on the streets and to put up political tables on the streets, and he blamed the activists in the audience for being uncivil, and that was why the city council didn't adopt a more reasonable proposal. I think he's completely naive, or I don't think he's disingenuous. I've talked to him. I don't think he's being deceptive or has some axe to grind. I think he has this naive belief that many people do when they first come into the political scene, that all we need to do is be sincere, argue reasonably with folks, and we will get a reasonable response. And unfortunately, power doesn't work that way. It just really does not. Do you disagree with me, Doug Loisel, or do you feel that if we only argue reasonably enough, the politicians will hear us?
I think going back to your statement about power, there was a gentleman by the name of Willard Waller, and he came up with the idea of the principle of least interest. And his premise was that whoever is most interested in continuing the relationship has the least power. And so I don't know how that plays into, you know, kind of your philosophy or your idea here, but whoever loves the most in a relationship has the least power. Whoever is most interested in continuing the relationship has the least power.
I think that has more to do with personal relationships than political relationships, because a political relationship is certainly a real thing, as a personal relationship is, but when you're talking about a political objective, it may not be directly related at all to the relationship between the people involved. So, you know, I mean, you know, the real, I do point out to people like Brent Adams and his Sanctuary Camp people that you must, or Steve Plaich, when he wants to end the sleeping banner, says he does in his campaign, that before you even begin to approach people in power with this, although there's nothing wrong with, you know, I suppose, doing so, you have to have power yourself, by the which I mean a constituency. You need to have, or the threat of something that's real. I mean, if you're a, you know, if you're a revolutionary fighter, it's a threat of arms. If you're, you know, a Gandhian person, it's the threat of mass movement, salt, you know, walking to the sea and, you know, disruption, mass disruptions. You have to have equal power. And it's not really a function of the relationship between you and the people you're talking to. It's a function of how much power you have when you come into that situation. And that's not really, and I think it may well be true once you're in that situation that the person, the other side, saying that you have power, may want to keep you talking rather than acting, and so they may have more of a stake in keeping you. I don't know, but I don't know how terribly relevant that is. What's relevant to me? Go ahead.
What one of the factors in civil dialogue is conscience, and so if I believe that I'm going to have a civil dialogue with you, and that you are going to respond to that civil dialogue in a civil fashion back, my assumption has to be that you have a well-developed conscience. The problem with conscience and the problem with having a civil dialogue is fear. And when people get into a position where they feel fearful, which is really my opinion about the Santa Cruz community and homelessness, it is very fear-driven. And that fear-drivenness creates a situation where civil dialogue isn't necessarily going to bring about any change. You know, fear is such a fundamental motivating factor in people's lives that they'll do almost anything to avoid fear, or they'll assign their fear to some group or some thing. You know, remember when we were little kids and we got under the chairs because of the threat of nuclear annihilation.
Duck and cover. You
know? Yeah, duck and cover. How fearful that was.
I mean, I agree with you. The only thing, but my point is, I think, somewhat different one, which is that if you want to influence the people in power, who I don't think operate out of necessarily because they are afraid or because I think they operate because they've come to some conclusions. I think they want to stay in power. That's one of the reasons they operate. They may have a series of beliefs about what is good for the world or good for the country, or they may feel they have to cater to certain other powerful interests and financial lobbies and voter constituencies that do. But the idea that you're going to have a rational dialogue with them, regardless of the fear factor, is, I think, really illusory unless you have power behind you. Now, it could be the power of fear. I mean, for example, in the Revolutionary War in the United States, in the colonies, Sam Adams was a notorious terrorist. They tarred and feathered tax agents. They didn't just have rational dialogue. You don't have rational dialogue with colonial agents who are trying to rip you off. You know, you burn their houses, you tar and feather them, and you run them out of town, in essence saying, you know, we're not going to do this. This is wrong. We're not going to do this. After, I mean, you've attempted remonstrations. You've sent people to Parliament. But they still jail you and flog you and do all these other things, which is an institutional system of punishment that we have in this country for homeless people, but also for everybody in many ways, particularly people who abuse the drug laws, but also people who challenge people in power. I mean, there's a lot of that. So what I say to people who want to make changes, whether in the civonomics stuff, is the idea that if only you're civil enough, you're going to get somewhere. I think you're right, too, about the fear. That's another issue. It's not you have to persuade Take Back Santa Cruz people. You have to persuade the people in power, who, some of whom are Take Back Santa Cruz people, but more of whom are established, institutionally entrenched people who have similar views but somewhat more muted but just as toxic, that have been pushing the same shit for decades from a position of power masked by liberal hypocrisy. That's my concern. They claim to be concerned about homeless people. Don Lane's a typical example. Lane, he said nothing about the attack on homeless camps. He does nothing about the seizure of homeless property. And this has been, he's been doing this for 25 years. He has been a politician. And we see the same process of transmogrification happening with Steve Plaich, who is turning more and more to the right, who has expelled people from his Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, myself for one, John Colby, the individual with the elaborate stuff, for another. And I think he's also censored other people and then denied he did so. He did that to two other people. But, I mean, it's a temptation to pander to power. It's always a temptation. I have it all the time. I find myself muting my arguments if I'm going to be talking to people like, the mayor or any public official or the district attorney, when in fact these people should be given less respect, not more, because they're abusing their positions of power or because the very position of power itself is an abuse, given the way it's functioning. That tends to be how I feel about it. And it's really hard. How do you fight this? You know, how are we going to get warming stuff this winter? How are we going to get sanctuary care? How are you going to get, you know, injection inhalation program? How are we going to stop the criminalization of homeless people and, you know, the ID cards and the security gates and all this crap? Your point about, you know, hard talking to fears. The other point is, my point is talking to people in power who say, oh, what do you got to back you up, buddy? We don't, you know, oh, yes, very reasonable. Next speaker, please. You know, that's their approach because they have come to conclusions and they're in a position of power. They don't have to listen. I see the same thing with attorneys who are well-intended, who sell out their clients right and left as public defenders. And they will tell you, we're getting the best deal for you can. But in fact, if the public defenders wanted the best deal, they demand jury trials for every fucking person. And they don't.
Right.
Now we have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Rabble Rouser Robert and this guy Doug.
Hello? This guy Doug and Rabble. Guy should be a band or something. Hey, I'm enjoying the show. I'm over here in Fresno. This is DG Matter Embryo. I just wanted to say that I think that's maybe a part of the Gandhi philosophies that I wouldn't really agree with the I'm going to assemble power thing. It's kind of what I'm not trying to do, and it seems to that apes the dominant paradigm and is not real thoughtful. Like, why would we want to assemble power? That's exactly the fucked up conundrum that we're the reason we're in this stupid conundrum in the first place. And what I'm trying to do is really kind of not assemble power and not interact that way with people. And I would 180 disagree with you. I think our personal relationship should should be just like political relationships. I think that's where we get all, we overthink it and get all out of kilter in political matters because we try to make them different than personal and just everyday common sense. There's no reason to get that way. Like, you could have a person who is completely sensical in every other way and they get thinking about a political question and they just don't even know what they're doing anymore. They're totally out of their element. There's no reason for that.
Doug, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I think I'm in agreement with you in that I was going to mention to Robert that you know, when I mentioned the you know, principle of least interest, I think that that not only is an interpersonal dynamic, but I think it's also a political dynamic. And I'm a believer in authority rather than power. With authority, you get the sense, when people use authority in relationships, either politically or interpersonally, the other person who they have actual power over realize that what they're asking for or what they're asking these persons to do, is ultimately in their best interest. And if a person acts in that capacity who has power, they no longer have power, they have authority. You can coerce somebody to do something, that's power. But if you can get somebody to do something because they realize that ultimately your concern is in their best interest, then you have authority. Authority is a long-term relationship stabilizing force. Power will just shift back and forth. And so I am a little bit in disagreement with Robert. It scares me to be in disagreement with Robert because, you know.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
I am very fearful. You know,
it's just a larger philosophical question, and almost any question you can think of is not, like, discussed enough. Part of the filter that I'm thinking, so it's good to just have the interchange, but part of the filter I'm thinking about it through is kind of like in the art, like, what is it? Like, the politics of it all seems kind of stagnated, and I think that's part of the point, not like that's lost on Robert or the meaning of this show, but these issues have been stagnated ever since I've been aware of them in Santa Cruz particularly and in most places actually. And I think it's fair to put out there for politics and civic life is really uncreative and like stagnated and stuff. And like I come from it a little more from the world of the arts, which just thrives on change and has something new all the time and is like intrinsically exciting and fresh. And like there's always something that's being built all the time. You know what I mean? And in politics and civic life, it's just rehashing, not only, but largely, way too much so, rehashing the same stuff and so stuck in a lack of change and stagnancy. Nothing else in nature is like that, everybody. You know what I mean? Nothing else. Only an insanely small and narrow, stupidly conceived human system could be that way. So let's, you know, let's not be that way anymore. That's you know, and I don't know exactly the ways to do that for politics and whatnot and activism, but it's way too stuck. You know, way too stuck. Like the whole Occupy experience really showed that. It was like an insular mass movement. Like, how can that be? Like, how can you be an insular, fractured mass movement that can't discuss that it's that way? I just don't really have time for that. Then we kind of, I think, those of us who are more in the artistic world, then we just go back into our milieu, which is vibrant and thriving, and then in some ways let the connections dwindle down with the political world. And I think that's sad. I don't want that to be the way it ends up. But it's like, come on, guys. You know what I mean? Work with us here. Let's, you know, it needs to be a little vibrant, more vibrant on your side of the fence, I would say.
We're going
to
vibrate you. Something to say, Doug. Go ahead.
No, I like that. That was very interesting. I really like what you said. One of the issues or one of the problems that I have with power is that M. Scott Peck would say that the most destructive addiction in Western society is power.
What about television or chocolate? We won't get into that.
Sorry. Anyway.
Yes.
So I just think, you know, I tend to be kind of an anti-power person in that I see power as being destructive. Robert seems to think that, you know, power needs to be met with power or we need to...
Well, it depends on what you mean by power. See, that's, if I may intrude here...
I'll just interject.
Sure.
The most addictive and destructive... The most destructive addiction we have in our society is the addiction to coercive power.
Okay, well, that's all very well to say that, But when coercive power is operating to repress people in a very serious way, as happens frequently in the world, usually a counterforce arises. And, you know, it is true, one can make different choices. I mean, and it doesn't mean, you know, some people think, well, if only I seized the, you know, the means of production, if only I, you know, if I were the king of the forest,
right.
Dictatorship of the proletariat, whatever.
Right.
And I have sympathies with those, that kind of view to some extent, but I think I also recognize that that has within itself the seeds of its own destruction and to replicate what went on. But simply to say that is to simply support the status quo is the problem, in my view. In other words, while I agree with you, DJ Embryo, that I think, you know, there are all kinds of creative things that artists do, and your metaphors are very vibrant, you know, and I think very accurate and, you know, and very inspirational. It's, I guess, I have to see more of real metaphors that translate themselves into political change, because there are many kinds of power, and I think the distinction of coercive power depends on what you're coercing someone to do. I mean, if you're coercing someone to stop them from killing someone else, rather, you know, whether you inspire them to stop someone else, you know, I mean that's nice if you can, but if it's done in a mechanical way,
I hear you.
You know, I mean, if the camps are running, you have to stop the camps.
Let me play you a song about the lack of killing a person, and maybe it will convince you. I know what you mean.
There are things that can do that. You know, I agree. There are.
Yes.
You know, but. In the meantime, there are crises. Of course, this crisis approach is something that's used on the right a lot to justify all kinds of shit. And we need
practical steps, and it can't be just staying in the realm of philosophy all the time. I mean, and not even necessarily mainly. I totally hear that. And a part of my point was like, what is it? Oh, more visionary thinking. Like, you know, like inject some Buckminster Fuller into the whole thing. You know, it's way too like less willing to just like try radically new things. And I know that's mainly the power structure. The authorities, but it's weird. You know what I mean? It's so odd that the majority of people aren't studying new ways of organizing all of society. Why? Because for like 100 years it's been clear that this way doesn't work and stuff, you know? So it's just odd that just for out of the joy and intellectual curiosity alone that most people wouldn't be kind of focused on that by now. It's fucking weird to me. It's odd. And we don't necessarily need to explain why per se, but I really think there's just a lack of visionary thinking. And some of that would entail maybe people finding ways to not even be dependent on employers anymore, either growing so much of their own food and living away from society, essentially, the cities that we have. Maybe it's going back to like a different way of life that isn't dependent on this enslavement that we have. We need just like radical ways, like strike out in totally new ways because we don't have that much to lose. Things are looking grim, and it's weird that people, there isn't that sense of urgency, you know, that you would think that there would be, and I don't know why not.
However, I have a sense of urgency because we have 2 minutes from Uncle Dennis bursting into the studio here.
Let me let you wrap up your show. Thanks so much for the show, Robert, and I'm sorry I didn't memorize your name, but it's good to talk to both
Doug
of you. Thanks for the show.
We will be expecting a full Fresno report on the next encounter with you, Mr. Philosopher.
It sounds good. Okay, very much aware. I'm going to be on a break from school like for the next 3 weeks soon,
and it'll
be better for me to call and give you reports at that time.
I want some non-coercive power reports, artistic if possible.
Hey, that sounds good.
All right.
That sounds good.
Thank you, DJ Embryo. Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you, everybody.
And also you, Doug Loisel, you are supposed to bring up the Carmel or the Monterey or the Salinas report, and all I get is a lot of highfalutin technical quotes from aphorisms from certain obscure philosophers or social scientists. You better get to work, Loisel. I mean, see what you can do.
I'm sorry. Well, once again, a failure.
You failed utterly. Actually, you've done a fine job. I appreciate it. I enjoyed your talk tonight, and I enjoyed my talk tonight. I always enjoy myself, often. Sometimes I don't. I'll be back again on Sunday at 9:30. Doug is welcome to come in again to subject himself to this kind of abuse. Although we've run over the territory.
Yeah.
We may have to find some new ways to abuse you. I think you should volunteer to go into the Lack of Services Center as a client and see what happens. I mean, could you disguise yourself? Could you carry it off?
Yeah, I would love to do that.
That would be interesting to see.
Yeah, it would be very interesting.
Because you did.